What number is this, Chip?
Episode 28.
Don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
28.
28. Episode 28.
Okay, no, I mean, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short. And Zilch.
You're listening to Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
Up your britches, folks. Let's rock and roll. Or as Adam West might do something like, well, chum, it's time to go.
That's not a bad Adam West.
Oh, I wasn't even really trying. You should hear it when I put the tights on. Anyway, hey, and welcome to episode 28 of Your Monkeys Podcast. How are we doing today? Today I'm joined by Melanie Mitchell.
Hello.
Sarah Clark.
Hello from Oklahoma.
And Jeff Geringer.
Hello, hello.
How are you doing today, sir?
Oh, we're doing excellent. I'm so excited to join this crew. You guys I'm like giddy. It's like I'm fans of you guys so much. So when I hear Sarah's voice and Melanie's voice and Ken, I'm just thrilled.
Well, that is awesome. You know, you were on our last episode, which was our salute to Big Boss Radio and a look at the Monkees' Lost 45. A lot of people really seem to enjoy that episode.
Well, what's nice about it is it gives everyone the chance to form their own opinions, because we all know that first album backwards and forwards.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a dip into the Monkees' mailbag.
P.O. Box 9847.
Pete Blatchford writes, thanks to Ken, Jeff, and Ghosty for an insightful, thought-provoking, and detailed discussion of the Monkees' Lost 45. I love the part about boss radio, a term that I was unfamiliar with. Ken, you sounded great and nailed the vernacular employed by these giants of AM radio. Ghosty's Casey Kasem was spot on. It was indeed. You raised some very interesting points and observations that I never would have considered about what the second single from the Monkees should have been. I agree, however, reluctantly, that I Wanna Be Free should have been it. Thank you for another wonderful and fun episode. I can't wait for the next one. And now if you'll excuse me, I've got some monkeying around to do. Well, you do that, brother. So we want to thank you, Pete Blatchford, for that wonderful review of the last episode, and we're glad that you are listening and glad you are part of this. There's some cool things happening right now in the world of the Monkees, and it seems like Rhino or whoever is in charge of the Monkees now seems to be getting the rights together to do Monkey Dolls. What do you think of that, Sarah Clark?
I think it's awesome. I pulled up the imagery that's come out and the press release. It is being put out by some folks called Figures Toy Company.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like they're going to be putting out three sets of dolls. One in the red button shirts, one with the four of them in tuxedos, and this is the set I'm looking forward most. We're going to get Monkey Men action figures.
This looks like a job for... Monkey Men! Up, up, and away!
So, Jeff, I have to ask you which one of the dolls you're planning on playing with, or which wave you're going to buy.
Isn't that sad? Oh, the Monkey Men. That was the one that just jumped right out at me.
I know. I love the Monkey Men because it's a combination of two things that I love, superheroes and the monkeys. So that is so cool. How about you, Melanie?
She's reduced to laughter.
She's thinking about Jeff and I having doll time.
We're all grappling with the fact that we're way too old to be playing with dolls, but we're so excited they're coming out.
Right.
I guess I would start with the 8-button shirts.
Ah, traditionalist. Yeah, to me, the one that I would least likely pick up are the ones in the tuxes. How about you, Sarah?
I agree. Those were the ones that were a slight disappointment. I've heard some chatter on the Zilch Facebook page, and I think some other places, that folks are hoping they sort of opt eventually against the tuxedos and put them in their, like, some of their second season, you know, really psychedelic garb. I totally could go for, like, a 12-inch Mickey and a poncho.
That's a whole nother conversation. But yeah. I will say this much. As a Kiss fan, I can tell you that this is how this is going to go down. Probably at about this time next year, there'll be another set of dolls announced. So you will get to see probably that tablecloth at some point, but they're going to exhaust the early years first. So.
Okay. Well, as long as they don't, as long as they look better than the finger puppets, I'm happy.
Which, again, oh, another whole discussion. Yeah, that's the last episode. And Sarah, these come in two different sizes, right?
8-inch and 12-inch figures is what the press release says.
8-inch and 12-inch figures. So you'll be able to get 8 to 12 inches of your favorite Monkey Man. And I'll just leave it there, folks. So.
Yep. So that's 24 different dolls if you want to collect them all. So,
yeah.
Well, I'm looking at it again. It says that all three series will be released in the 8-inch figure, while only the Red Shirt series will be released as both 8 and 12-inch figures.
Ah, well, there you go.
Let's not go there, please.
Oh, we've been there and back again.
Yeah.
So, that's very cool. And if you're a Monkees collector and you're finally going to get some cool Monkees dolls, that's awesome. There was an interesting ad that ran recently, and here it is.
Here they come.
We come.
The Monkees, Mickey Dolenz and Peter Tork, Friday, March 27th, 8 p.m., Fantasy Springs Resort Casino. The Monkees, singing all their hits. Tickets are on sale now at the box office, online at fantasyspringsresort.com, or call 1-800-827-2946. The Monkees, Mickey Dolenz and Peter Tork.
And Jeff Gehringer, you were at that show. Would you like to tell us about the Tookies with Mickey and Peter as the Monkees?
I was real excited to go because that's a configuration I have never seen. And to my knowledge, there's never been one of just Mickey and Peter. So the theater was beautiful. It was in a real nice casino that was near Palm Springs. And the nice part about going to a Monkees concert, you know, is you see the same faces. There's a family involved. And I ran into Nikki Locke, and I ran into Molly O'Hara, and all the same people that, you know, show up at all the Monkees local events. But the fun part was, when I saw Nikki Locke, she was wearing a Zilch podcast t-shirt.
Yay! Excellent.
Woo!
Does that girl know how to dress or what?
No, it looked great. I mean, it looked great compared to what they were selling. The merchandise for this little mini tour is non-existent. They just have one little poster. The rest is just the old Nesmith ones from 2014. So it was great to see Nikki in the podcast t-shirt, and it made me smile.
The Zilch podcast shirts for the discriminating Monkey fan. So enough about what people were wearing. How was the show?
Well, first, Andrew Sandoval is back.
Uh-huh.
We had a discussion on the website about a month ago about who the fifth Monkey was. And obviously there's ones that we all talked about, Don Kirshner or... You know, Andrew Sandoval in the last two decades has been the biggest fan as a Monkey fan we could ever have. His production is great. His knowledge is great. He pushes the guys to do different songs.
Uh-huh.
And I just can't tell you how much I appreciate what Andrew did. When we get to the actual concert, they sounded so good. I don't know if it's just they've been off the stage for a while, but Peter's vocals were dead on. And Mickey, of course, is just an amazement with his voice. A couple songs that I did want to bring up that were out of the ordinary. First of all, they did I'll Be Back Upon My Feet. Now, they did this, you know, years and years ago, but it's been a long time since we've heard it. And they matched the video with Mickey singing live, and it was really cool. The second thing, they did an acoustic set.
Mm.
How long have we all been crying to get that acoustic set? And for two reasons. One, it's just great to hear the song stripped down and just to see Mickey and Peter noodling on it. But what I loved about it is it gives them a chance to be Monkees.
Uh-huh.
You know, if there's one thing that I miss since Nez joined the group is it's music, 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 and very little comedy. This gives them a chance to screw around and take little digs at each other or a little dig at Mike. And it was so much fun to see them screw around. I can't tell you. Plus, what they did acoustically was great. They came out, they played the video for tear the top off of my head.
Mm.
And when the video ended, there's Peter playing right along with it, and they sang like a chorus of Tear the Top Right Off of My Head, which they've never done in concert to my knowledge.
Wow.
So that was so cool.
Jeff, that's something that Peter did in his solo show a few years ago, which Andrew Sandoval was in charge of that show, too.
Wow.
That's right.
He timed it up and sang along with the video and then just continued the song when the video ended.
So cool. They also did acoustically Take a Giant Step, Sometime in the Morning, Papa Jean's Blues, and I'll Spend My Life with You.
Oh, wow.
The next thing, and this is pure Andrew. You remember when Natalie Cole came out with Unforgettable and she sang to a video of her dad?
Mm-hmm.
That same ambience, and they had Cuddly Toy. And it was, you know, there's two Cuddly Toy videos. It was one without the dancing and the girl, but
yes.
The one where they're just sitting around playing.
Mm-hmm.
They stripped out everything but Davy's voice, and the band on stage played along, and Mickey and Peter sang harmonies to Davy on the screen. It was really, really touching. I can't tell how special that was.
Oh, wow.
That's wonderful. I've been wanting them to do that for the past 3 years. That is great.
Yeah.
Also was nice is they went back to, you know, how they used to do in the 60s. They did solo spots and called them as such. Mickey did his slowdown version of Sugar Sugar.
Mm.
And Peter did Even Fight and Get the Blues, which was just awesome.
Oh, but, great. You
know, almost 2 hours. The place was probably 3/4 full. It looked like they had saved a lot of seats for high rollers and gamblers, because they kind of got filled up as the concert went along. And so That's the disadvantage of playing in a casino is that they do hold back seats. I know, you know, I got in right when the tickets went on sale and I was fifth row. And it's because front rows were, you know, for high-end people.
Right.
But I have to tell you, if this is where we're going and if this is how we're going to celebrate the 50th anniversary next year, boy, we're in great hands. It was just a really great, fun, exciting, and a monkey show. You know, it wasn't Peter Tork and Mickey Dolan sing the hits of the Monkees. It was the Monkees.
Wonderful.
Well, okay, we're not done yet. Got one more for you, but before I sing this, just want to tell all you folks out there, you tell your little kids, I sang this song long before Shrek.
Chase, not in my mind. I'm in love. I'm in to Wonderland for us. There's a tall beanstalk for Jack. The sleepy train will take you there so safely down the track. With a Sandman at the throttle, you'll be off to dreams and back. It's Spiller time.
You know,
I'm so excited.
Yeah, because Melanie's going to get to go later this month.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, I'm going to see the show in Ontario, and I'm going to see it twice.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Is it the one that got replaced?
No, that's the one in Edmonton. Ah. They had to change venues, but if anyone's holding tickets for that Wednesday, April 22nd show in Edmonton, Alberta, don't fear. The show is still going on. They've just moved to a slightly smaller venue.
And we look forward to your review. I wish I was going with you. We all wish that we were there. And
I myself am deeply jealous.
I'm going to be in Orillia, Ontario for the Two Keys show April 24th and 25th. And if any of our listeners are there, try to look for me. I'll be wearing a Zilch t-shirt myself, and I can't wait to meet you.
And it'll be a Zilch shirt with a blue background, right?
That's correct.
So look her up, folks.
I haven't received it yet, but I'm expecting it to arrive any minute now.
Excellent, excellent. You know, there's a lot of people that have argued on message boards and on Facebook, you know, that they shouldn't go out as just the two of them or whatever. But, you know, folks, none of us are getting any younger. And if you want to see the Monkees, I suggest you get out there and enjoy whatever is out there to be had, because smiles are at a premium, and I say get what you can.
You said it, Ken.
You know, the word oldies isn't a dirty word, not in my book anyway. Hey, this is Ghosty. How would you like to listen to a radio show that spins top hits, lost gems, and then some from the glorious years between 1955 and 1972? One that features interviews with the likes of Julie Newmar, John Sebastian, Al Jardine, Mickey Dolenz, Don Wells, David Cassidy, Angela Cartwright, Bill Medley, Ronnie Spector, Connie Stevens, and many more. Well, the Vintage Rockin' Pop Shop is on the air every Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on 89.1 WFDU FM. That's in the New York, New Jersey area. You can also listen to it live online by going to WFDU.FM. But there's an even easier way for you folks who aren't in the New York, New Jersey area and don't want to have to get up at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on a Sunday morning. You can listen to it anytime you want just by clicking the handy links over on our Facebook page. So go on to Facebook. You're probably already on Facebook. Look for the Vintage Rockin' Pop Shop. Like it, live it, love it. And thanks.
Sarah, I believe the Monkees with Mickey and Peter are doing some sort of a festival over in England?
Yes, they are going to play the Moseley Folk Festival on September 4th, 5th, and 6th. It's in Moseley Park in Birmingham, England. They are headlining the festival. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. And there's actually some other really good groups that are going to be on here. If you like folky kind of indie type stuff, it's a really good list of the ones that I recognize. Polyphonic Spree especially, I like those guys. So I think if you are going to be on that side of the Atlantic, you ought to go out and check them out. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
So we send some love to Ian Lee and all of our UK friends over there. Enjoy it. Let us know what you thought of it. And if you want, you can record an MP3 and send your review, and we will play it on Zilch. So we look forward to that. So get out there and see the Monkees. It's time to monkey around. Check out this very cool retro commercial from back in the 60s for Monkees Boots.
The Monkees. Monkees, monkees. What a feeling you get from monkees. You're swinging down the street and a wild heat starts to get you. You can't stop swinging with your bird cause the beat you heard just won't let.
Boots inspired by the new heroes, the Monkees. Monkey boots, they open your eyes when you see them. They make you come alive when you wear them. Monkey boots from $7.99 to $11.99. And for girls, monkey tees only $4.99. And only from Tomacan.
Boots by Tomacan. What a feeling you get from
we have some exciting news. We got a phone call here at Zilch headquarters. And Sarah, who are we interviewing for the next episode, episode 29 of Zilch?
We, meaning Ken, is interviewing, oh, I can't believe I get to say this, Bobby Hart.
That's true, Bobby Hart. He rang us up, and he was ready for his Zilch close-up. He has his new book coming out, Psychedelic Bubblegum. It's a really good interview. He really goes into some details about working with the monkeys and some of his philosophies, and he also talks about a book that he's got coming out, so it's very good.
I can't wait to hear it.
He's such a sweet man, too. He's so kind and warm.
He is, and he's very open and honest, and we even talked about maybe him doing a commentary track for when we discuss the Dolan's Jones Boyce and Hart album.
Wow.
So awesome. That could be pretty cool.
I love that album.
So we look forward to that. Tell your friends that that's coming up on the next Zilch.
I'm Brett Velez. My new book, A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkees from a Fan's Perspective, chronicles my experiences with the Monkees from the 1960s into today, along with stories by other fans and how the Monkees touched our lives. A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkees from a Fan's Perspective by Fred Velez, available on Amazon.com, CreateSpace.com, Smashwords.com, Apple iBooks, Barnes & Noble Nook, and other print and ebook outlets.
Today on Zilch, episode 28, we're doing a color cast commentary for what episode, Melanie?
Don't Look a Gift Horse in the Mouth.
Ah, and you and Craig and Jeff will sit down and break that show down and let us know all the behind-the-scenes details and all of your observations. So we look forward to another excellent color cast. Sometimes when we do these color cast commentaries, we like to take a look back at what the monkeys were doing around the time of the filming of the particular episodes. I'm going to turn it over to Melanie. What were the monkeys doing during the time of this episode?
They were filming this episode. That's pretty much all they were doing, because this was the first episode in regular production.
Mm-hmm.
The pilot, of course, was done earlier, but once, you know, 6 months later when they started filming again, this was the first one, and they were not doing anything but making this episode. And I think that's wise. They were focused on the core product and getting it right. There is a wonderful anecdote in Harold Bronson's book, Hey, Hey, We're the Monkees, from 1996, told in Bob Rafelson's own words about the very first day of filming. And I'd like to share that with you guys now. He writes, "We were on location at a farm, ready to shoot Don't Look a Gift Horse in the Mouth. It was a half hour away from shoot time, and the location guy from Screen Gems, a typical bureaucrat, said, 'I went to the farm, but there's no farmer.' I said, 'You paid him $500 for the use of the place. Go find him.' He said, 'I don't know what to do.' I said, 'Well, just jump over the fence and go knock on his door.' He jumped over the fence and was told that the farmer was on the back 40. He said, 'I'm going to the back 40. Just knock the gate down,' I said. 'Oh, Screen Gems can't possibly allow anything like that.' I told him, 'You go look for the farmer.' He went, and I took the first truck and rammed the gate, broke it open, and we marched in. After all, to pay for a gate was going to cost $500, and it was $10,000 an hour to shoot. In any event, I shot 125 setups on the first day, breaking every record in television."
Wow.
Here endeth the lesson.
Mickey actually did a commentary track for the movie Daydream Believers, and he referenced this, correct, Melanie?
Well, they included that scene in that movie. But in the movie, they made it so that Bob Rafelson was standing by while the monkeys themselves drove the truck through the gate. I think they had Davy at the wheel, and Bob was looking horrified. They recast the story slightly for that biopic.
Vandalism. It's vandalism. Arrest those boys. Those long-haired, weirdo, anti-American punks.
Wow. Little dramatic license.
Yeah, just
Well, Jeff, we're going to hand you the big remote.
You're kidding. I get to push the button?
You get to push the button.
Outstanding.
Melanie, would you hand Jeff the remote there?
There you go.
Tell my wife that I really can push the remote. This is great.
For the first time, you're in charge.
Sure.
Now, there's really only one big button on it, and it just says, simply, monkeys. Why don't you click away, and we will go to the ColorCast commentary.
Here we go.
Hey, wait a minute, guys. You know what? It's 7:30, 6:30 Central Time. It's time for the monkeys. I wonder if anybody around here has got a television set.
Hi, friends. Ralph Williams, one of the world's largest...
Hi, I'm the fella that called before. Where's the monkey?
Oh, I'm the monkey.
You're the monkey? You don't need a vet, young man. You need a psychiatrist.
Now, wait a minute. You don't understand. I'm not a real monkey. I'm the kind of monkey that sings.
Holy cliffhangers, Batman.
The Monkees, brought to you by Kellogg.
Tonight's Monkeys ColorCast commentary is brought to you by the Henry Cabot Lodge. Worn out after a long day on the dusty roads, the friendly, experienced, and musically gifted staff of the Henry Cabot Lodge will see to your every need. Enjoy personalized, attentive service at the Henry Cabot Lodge, where your guest is as good as mine.
Hello and welcome back to the Monkeys ColorCast commentary. On this episode, we'll be talking about Don't Look a Gift Horse in the Mouth. I'm Craig Cohen, and as always, I have with me Monkey Magic author Melanie Mitchell.
Hi.
Hi, Melanie. It's great to talk to you, as always.
Thank you.
And over in his hermetically sealed bubble, we have a sick but game for a recording, Jeff Hewlett. Jeff, thank you so much for taking that boost of vitamin C and sitting down with us.
And thank you for that wonderful introduction, Craig. You won that, and very impressed with your skills.
Jeff, I'm emailing you a bowl of chicken soup.
Oh, I ate some of that yesterday. Didn't help much, but thank you.
All right, so before we get into Don't Look a Gift Horse in the Mouth.
Go milk the cow. See that you fill this.
Boy, that just proves how far out in the country we are.
What do you mean?
The milkman doesn't even deliver here.
Let's talk about some, it seems like we have this every episode now, some unfinished business from last episode. Do you want to talk about that, Melanie?
Sure. Just two things tonight. Last ColorCast commentary was Monkeys in a Ghost Town. And one of the questions that had come up was what other shows were filmed at the Columbia Ranch?
Right.
In the intervening weeks, I have fallen deep into a wonderful website called the Unofficial Columbia Ranch website. And it has an interactive map, and boy, is it fascinating. I had a completely wrong impression of what that place was like. It's actually quite small. It's bounded on all four sides by city streets. And it was very compact, but it had Western streets, and it had vaguely European streets, and it had residential streets and old-fashioned streets and all kinds of interesting things and places to film, but it was all very tightly packed together. The Batman and Superman movie serials were filmed there, as were Three Stooges movies and Blondie.
Oh, wow.
The comic strip was made into a movie, and in fact, the residential street where all the sitcoms lived was called Blondie Street. Father Knows Best, The Donna Reed Show, Dennis the Menace, Hazel, The Farmer's Daughter, Bewitched, Gidget, I Dream of Jeannie, Flying Nun, The Partridge Family, Bridget Loves Bernie, Apple's Way, Police Woman, Fantasy Island, Scarecrow and Mrs. King, and more recently, Life Goes On and Erie, Indiana, all filmed on the Columbia Ranch.
Wow. Wow. And I do remember you posting a link to that site either on the Zilch page or on your Monkey Magic page, and it did look like a great resource.
It's amazing, and it's so fascinating to see all the little places that you've seen on the Monkees also appearing on all these other TV shows.
Oh, yeah, it is definitely very, very cool. All right, so without with that out of the way, we'll now look ahead to Don't Look a Gift Horse in the Mouth.
Can I just throw in also, we talked so much about that actor who played multiple roles in that episode.
Yes.
He was the Indian and also Chester, and we were pretty sure he was also the cop.
Yes.
Who gave them a ticket at the very end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Since we talked so much about him, but none of us had his name right in front of us, I thought I'd clear that up to give credit where credit is due. His name is Hollis Morrison. Yay, Hollis.
Yeah, definitely a trivia question, if there ever was one related to the Monkees TV show. So, now looking at some of the talent in the episode we're going to be watching today, we're going to talk about Henry Corden, who we saw in a previous episode. Right, Melanie?
Yeah, he's the Mr. Babbitt and appears in 4 episodes in the first season. We previously saw him in Monkey See, Monkey Die. I looked up a couple of interesting facts about Mr. Corden. One is that in 1977, he took over the role of Fred Flintstone on the animated series and various other animated events that had Fred Flintstone in them. He took the place of Alan Reed when Alan Reed passed away.
Right.
Also, early in his career, he had a recurring role in Mickey's father's TV series, The Count of Monte Cristo. Appeared in 8 episodes.
Wow, so look at that little connection. That's very, very cool. We're also going to talk about Kerry McLean, who played Jonathan, the little boy in this episode. And from every indication, this episode was his first acting role. He also starred guest starred on The Virginian, That Girl, Gunsmoke, Green Acres, I Dream of Jeannie, Family Affair, Bonanza, The Brady Bunch, multiple episodes of The Cowboys, and his final TV appearance, his final acting appearance, is in a 1976 TV series called The Quest. So kind of an interesting story there. I guess he was a child actor who moved on to other ventures when he got older. You don't know anything more about him, Melanie?
That's all I was able to find. It seems like he stopped doing television and movies when he was 18.
Yeah. You know, it's a story of a lot of child actors, you know. It's hard to make that transition, and they find other ways to keep themselves busy and to make money.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about Jerry Colonna?
Sure. Jerry Colonna plays the veterinarian Dr. Mann in this episode, and he, for many, many, many years, was a member of Bob Hope's comedy troupe, appearing with Bob Hope on radio, film, TV specials, and USO tours. And in 1951, he had his own TV show, The Jerry Colonna Show, which only lasted 1 season.
Mm. And we also are going to talk about Jim Bowles. And unless I'm mistaken, he was on another Monkees episode, right?
Yeah, he'll appear again in Hillbilly Honeymoon as the preacher.
Okay, very cool. So a lot of folks to look out for in this episode. And I guess we're going to jump right in if you guys are ready.
I'm just going to point out that this is the second episode filmed. It was the first first episode filmed in regular production in 1966, written by Dave Evans and directed by Robert Ravelson.
All right, right on. So we will start our color cast commentary for Don't Look a Gift Horse in the Mouth in 3, 2, 1.
All right. Well, I have a copy of the script for this episode, and it doesn't say anything about Davy doing gymnastics on the beach. It just says that Davy's walking along the beach when he meets up with the little boy and the horse.
So Davy was showing off, is what you're saying.
Yeah, that house that he pointed out is actually from the pilot, and it doesn't match up with the actual interior of the pad as we see it later in the episode.
I wonder what that beachfront property is worth today.
Oh, God, only knows. Even if it is a bit ramshackle.
So Davy was a jockey prior to becoming a musician, right?
Apprentice, at least.
Yeah.
It's not clear, but he did get his jockey's license eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So.
This episode aired on Halloween night, 1966. And it's a shame we never got a true Halloween episode of the Monkees. But here we have Mickey sort of doing a werewolf riff, which is kind of interesting.
I wonder how much of that is ad-libbed. It sure looks like a lot of it is.
Well, you have the script, Melanie. Is there anything in there about related to this scene?
the werewolf scene is definitely in there. Some of the details are not, like Mike putting salt on his hand or Mickey climbing up on the outside of the staircase, but the whole werewolf joke, and it is in the script. And now we have the ominous arrival of Mr. Babbitt.
You notice that there's a little paper sign there. In case it's a case of fire, run, but it points to this fire extinguisher.
I love it.
Later on in the episode, we'll see their mailbox. That's a good one, too. I'll point it out when we get there. It's just so sweet seeing Mickey trying to explain the whole werewolf thing. You know how you do. It's just one of those things that you do. You know how when you're a werewolf and you go, ooh!
I like the little musical accompaniment when the landlord comes in as well. You have a little goofy but ominous piano roll. And they do a little one again later.
Yeah, he's got quite a dramatic arrival. So,
it's interesting to say, you said he was only on, what, 4 episodes of the series?
4 episodes as Mr. Babbitt, and he appeared again in the second season in a different role.
Yeah, it makes you think about how sitcoms have sort of changed over time, and that if this series was made today, that landlord character would have definitely been seen a lot more than we saw him here.
Yeah, I love Davey's cheeky grin when he brings the horse into the house.
How did he get it in? Through the back door or?
Up those stairs from the beach.
That could have been an episode unto itself.
I actually did a little bit of an analysis of characters when I was writing my book, and I discovered that other than Mr. Babbitt, who appeared in 4 episodes, there is no character who ever appeared in a second episode. No one ever came back. So it's actually kind of interesting that Babbitt appeared in 4 because every single other character was once.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting stat there because in an earlier episode we saw the episode where Davey's grandfather came to visit, we saw that neighbor who sort of came in.
Mm-hmm.
Who, like you just said, we never saw again.
We'll see a different neighbor tonight. So there's that ramshackle staircase that the horse supposedly climbed up.
God, imagine rounding it around the corner to get it through that little door.
Now they have it in the apartment facing the outside where they brought it in. So they must have walked it around.
Yeah, and I have to keep reminding myself the horse's name is Jeremy. The little boy's name is Jonathan.
Yes.
Jeremy's the horse. Jonathan's the boy. I'm practicing that.
Well, you got another 20 minutes or so to get it right.
This first half of the episode is very dependent on dialogue and puns and jokes that are expressed in language. It's a very dialogue heavy section of the story. You know, the whole thing about, you know, a dog doesn't sound like a horse, and you know, how does he think it's a horse? We didn't steal the horse. You know, it's all about misunderstandings, and now Mickey's doing his werewolf thing again. There's the mailbox. You see the mailbox?
Do
you notice that weird little bit of continuity in there as well? You see Peter riding into the shot on a unicycle, but then they cut and he's sitting in the corner on the unicycle. And then he's riding in again. It's interesting the way they shot those. I wonder which ones were recut or edited in.
I like Mike's plan here.
Yeah. I love the line, he already knows about us. It's the horse you have to hide. Yeah. It's a very suggestive line in 20th century or 21st century language, but back then it was purely innocent, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's just noticed the horse. So supposedly that's Peter and Davey inside a horse costume.
Yes.
The ruse they're using to get rid of Babbitt. Yeah, they would win the prize.
Oh, yeah. Goodness. And you know what? That could tie in with the Halloween theme as well. They're in costume.
There you go.
Maybe an executive was thinking a little outside the box when they decided to air this on Halloween night.
So they're trying to drag the horse across the room and watch the expression on Davy's face as he watches them try to drag this horse. You can't get a horse to move that way. He weighs more than you do. And Davy's just shaking his head. Yeah, right, guys. No, that's not going to work. So they're going to give him something to eat.
Yeah, I love how they never have enough money to buy food, but they have a horse costume. And the horse costume just happens to match the horse's head exactly. You ever notice that it's a black horse head with a little white spot on it?
Oh, wow.
It matches perfectly when they bring it down the stairs.
So now they're giving the, what is that, root beer?
Root beer soup.
Root beer soup.
And I love how they do the camera shake to simulate the horse falling down.
Well, you know, Davey says that's not funny. And the truth is, that's not funny. To have a horse topple over like that is very scary. Of course, it's just a very well-trained horse who was asked to lie down. But, you know, if he really did fall over like that, it would be pretty dire. It's all very fast. You know, so, you know, instantly Mike is in the veterinarian's office. There's no establishing shot. There's no arriving in the building or walking through the receptionist's office or anything. It's just like, bang, he's there.
Another interesting background thing there, too, by the way, while it's on the screen. Did you notice that? Dunphy the Wonder Dog.
Yeah.
What? I tried Googling that, but there is no reference to Dunphy the Wonder Dog.
Interesting.
I wonder what that is or was. It's some kind of inside joke, maybe.
I'm sure we'll know by next episode, either between the great Zilch listeners out there or the research that Melanie seems to take great pride in doing for us in between
now.
Episodes.
And again, boom, we're back at the pad. There was no transition. Mike looks through the big magnifying glass, and the next thing you know, we're looking through the magnifying glass onto horse's head. Everything is happening very quickly in this first half of the episode. The second half of the episode has a completely different pace.
Yeah. But a lot of this work here really showcases how cinematic The Monkees was as a TV show. And if you look at the talent behind the camera, that's not really surprising. But it's definitely more adventurous than a lot of especially situation comedies from the 60s were.
Mm-hmm. So things are getting even more complicated. You go here, I'm going to go there. And I never do figure out whether the veterinarian is a complete idiot or if he's just, you know, going along with it just because it's interesting. I'm not sure. Now, there was a big banging on the door, but look who was banging on the door.
Little woman.
Yeah. That loud banging made you think that Babbitt was back, but it's just Miss Purdy with a cake. But she seems to be quite eager to see the rest of the boys.
Yeah.
It's always a big thing in these shows with people seeing things they don't expect and completely passing out because of them. I don't know of anybody who would actually pass out at the sight of a horse, but
yeah.
And a horse walking backwards via just reversing the film.
Yeah, watch Mickey. He's about to run for a glass of water. When he comes back, he'll do a rather spectacular pratfall that wasn't in the script. There he goes.
God, the amount of stunt work or inadvertent stunt work that these monkeys did on these episodes is really amazing.
Yeah, quite a few dangerous stunts in this episode alone, with Davey doing the somersaults, Mickey falling, and I think there's a gag where Peter is taking Davey's boot off later and does like a flip on the beach.
Yeah, that's a pretty impressive little bit of teamwork there. Makes one of those things that makes me wonder if they had any kind of practice or safety equipment or a stunt coordinator who said, okay, let's run through this slowly and make sure that no one's going to get hurt kind of thing. And there's the big payoff. It talks. So we come back from commercial. Notice that Davey is bareback on the horse with nothing but a halter and a rope to guide the horse with.
And no shoes.
Yeah. I'm going to bring that up a little bit later.
Yeah. That's pretty amazing. I rode a horse a couple of months ago, and it's pretty amazing how much gear you need to put on a horse to ride it. So that's pretty impressive there. Another funny thing about this episode is what a lot of Hollywood people say, to never work with kids or animals, and this episode has both.
Not only that, this is the first thing that Bob Rafelson ever directed.
Oh, wow, yeah.
But he wasn't a director until this episode, the very first episode out of the box. He's a first-time director. Not only do we have kids and animals, we've also got two different locations.
Yeah, and here's one of those cinematic-type shots, especially when they go through the barn here.
But compare this to Mike's arrival in the veterinarian's office, which was instantaneous. Mm-hmm. Here we have this long establishing shot. The long drive across the farm on the Jeep. Suddenly, in the second half of the episode, everything is much slower, much more open. We're outdoors almost all the time, whereas the other half of the episode was almost all indoors.
Right.
I'm wondering if anybody was ever confused back in the when the show was actually on, because you see the monkey mobile in the credits, but in this one, you see Davey driving in a Jeep.
Yeah,
I wonder where the monkey mobile is.
And the pilot hasn't aired yet. That has yet another vehicle for the monkeys. So I don't know. They probably took a lot on faith. Not sure. You notice there's a guitar sitting up on the hay bales. I'm not sure why they brought a guitar with them, but it becomes a plot point later on.
In case they need to do a musical number.
Yeah.
So they decided that they would pay the farmer the cost of the horse in order for him to keep it, which is $100, which even by 1966 standards seems very, very cheap.
Well, that's just, I think, you know, towards the keeping of the horse, but it just happens to be what the original price of the horse was. I'm not sure how this all works.
I think you call that a plot convenience.
Yeah. I mean, minimum wage was $1.25 an hour, and there's four of them, so that's $5 per hour for an 8-hour day, $40 a day, but he offered to work for a week, so I'm sorry,
now,
I'm talking like an accountant.
I assume Peter's not actually under that pile of hay while they're poking it with the pitchforks.
I would hope so.
I don't know, with some of the stunt work they do, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
And I also like Farmer Jenkins keeps showing up just to make rude, sarcastic comments about things. Like, he doesn't have anything better to do, this neighbor who keeps coming by to make snide remarks.
Yeah.
This is a sweet little sequence here where Mickey's describing the hog call, and he does this wee, 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 wee all the way on this little piggy comes, and this little piggy comes. That was not in the script.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And more of that famous Mickey ad-libbing.
And Melanie, just to remind people, you have been doing script breakdowns for certain episodes over at your Tumblr blog that you link to on the Monkey Magic Facebook page, right?
Right. That's bluemoonalto.tumblr.com. Yeah, I've already done Don't Look a Gift Horse in the Mouth. Very interesting seeing how it was changed. I love how Mickey's hog call echoes across all of Los Angeles. And brings Babbitt to the door. And a flock of chickens. The script called for the flock of chickens, but the script did not call for the monkeys to try to catch the flock of chickens.
Oh.
So that's another thing that was added there on the farm. And I love the sequence.
That's probably all a result of that improv approach they took, where you find comedy in whatever props are handy, and I guess chickens are great props.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Big chunks of what happens in this half of the episode are not in the script. And then we're about to come to my absolute favorite moment in this entire episode, which is, once we get past this joke about the milkman. First of all, Mike says, "I better go warn the cow," which is just a wonderful line. And then they just start playing catch with a milk bucket.
Mm.
And again, not in the script. They're just showing them having fun and being joyful. It really is a lovely sequence.
Yeah, it's very effective. It's very effective. It humanizes them, actually. I think it makes the audience kind of relate to them a bit.
Well, sure.
And we're in the a musical romp here now.
Mm-hmm.
I love that this romp was actually filmed on the location.
Yeah.
As opposed to the ones we've seen that are cobbled together from other shoots, you know?
Yeah, and this is Papa Jean's Blues, and there's it's some kind of edit of this song, isn't it? Doesn't it? It seemed to me like it cuts at a certain point.
Yeah, it's going to cut when they actually start dealing with the milking of the cow, which is coming up very soon. That poor cow. I mean, what did she do to deserve this? She looks like the sweetest, most patient bovine in the history of cowkind.
That's why she got the gig.
And I like that they actually cut the song right after the play Magic Fingers line.
Right.
So that it actually sounds like this may be part of the song.
Yeah.
And I love that they're filming on location and they hauled out those matador suits to the location.
Mm-hmm.
So that they could change into them, you know.
Right. And I think it's particularly effective how they use the stock footage of the actual bullfight. It's a little bit dizzying. I remember being confused a little bit when I was a kid by this sequence because it clearly doesn't match up. But yeah, watching it as an adult, you know, I appreciate the effort they put into blending the two sequences in a way that is clearly fake and yet at the same time, you know, has some of that, I don't know, it's just structurally fun to watch.
Oh, yeah.
And being a poor cow.
It's interesting that Mike climbed over that fence to milk the cow, but the cow's not actually penned in anywhere.
Oh, right.
You see the other side, it's just wide open. Like the cow's not actually penned in.
He looks so proud of himself.
He does look so.
Now, is that some John Deere product placement in the background there?
Oh, wow.
Or is that free advertising for John Deere by accident?
Ooh. Probably inadvertent product placement, knowing the time period.
In today's TV, that would have to be blurred out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Notice their flannels and dungarees have all been replaced by their normal street clothes. And here comes that sarcastic Farmer Jenkins again, just to make some snide remarks.
But he inadvertently saves the day.
True. He brings up the whole horse race idea. But this is the part that confuses me a little bit. Davy says, I've ridden that horse, and he moves along pretty well. And I thought, Davy, the only riding you've done on that horse was bareback with a halter.
Yeah.
How in the world do you know that horse can gallop?
Yeah.
Maybe you rode him up the stairs.
But, of course, the horse race, we're not going to be dealing with a halter and bareback. Suddenly, Jeremy has a full set of thoroughbred racing tack.
Yeah.
That fits Davy.
Yeah. I love this bit with Mickey telling Davy how to ride the horse.
And I love the unlit stogie he's got.
Yeah. It's really a lot of fun with this whole sequence. And the whole horse race sequence from beginning to end.
There's that
Peter. Yeah. Pretty impressive.
Was less than 100 words and less than a page in the script.
Oh, wow.
It says, there's a horse race, there's a song, and that's all. Everything, the flip, the jockey outfit, the bugle, everything was added, and not in the script. And they have a lot of fun with that bugle.
They certainly do. And, of course, this episode features one of those mystery songs that never wound up being on an official Monkees album.
And
it confused me as a kid.
I bet it did, yeah.
Because I remember looking for this song because I liked it and I wanted to find it and it just wasn't there.
Yeah, it's All the King's Horses.
Yes.
Yeah.
In 1970, they substituted I Never Thought It Peculiar.
Ooh.
For All the King's Horses. And
that doesn't work.
This episode did not get a rerun in the summer of 1967, so there is no substitution from headquarters.
Hmm. Fascinating.
Now, it seems like they're back on the beach, so they've got to be pretty far from the farm at this point.
Yeah.
How were they transporting the horses to and from... another thing when I went out riding with the horses a couple months ago is how long it took for us to get them in and out of the the vehicles that were moving them.
Such inconveniences. I have no idea how far. The farm was close enough that Jonathan could walk it in a day.
Oh, good point.
This sequence was filmed on Zuma Beach, and the same day that they filmed the horse race sequence, they also filmed the playground sequence from Monkey vs. Machine.
Okay.
Very cool.
Same beach, same day.
Yeah. And if you notice, they must have done at least a couple of runs up and down the beach, because in a couple of the cuts, you see multiple sets of tire tracks.
Ah.
So you know they drove up and down at least a couple of times.
So Davey won.
Yeah.
Saves the day. And I really like the fact that in this episode, the monkeys really go out of their way to do something nice for a kid.
Mm-hmm. So
there's the payoff.
Yeah. That was a large bet for those days.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
$100 a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when I was a kid in the 70s, I got a dollar for allowance and I thought that was a lot of money.
You got a dollar?
I got a dollar.
Wow. I had the wrong allowance giver. I got 50 cents.
Wow, man. My grandfather gave me a dollar.
And you had to walk uphill to school 7 miles both ways?
Both ways, in the snow.
Now, the tag sequence here in the script called for a different animal. Care to guess what?
A
two-humped camel?
It was supposed to be a baby elephant.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I'm impressed they got a camel, period.
Yeah.
So now we get the rest of Papa Jean's blues. They spliced it here at the end.
Very, very interesting approach. Yeah.
And you talk about a romp that doesn't have anything to do with the episode in progress.
Yeah.
This is the usual cobbled together.
Yeah, there's Davey with his world record setting eight maracas.
The quasi-live performance.
And I think this may be the most lively performance. Look how happy Mike looks.
Yeah.
He even winks and does a little flourish at the end. And that's the end.
Yep, so we've made it through another color cast commentary, and as always, this one was a lot of fun. So I guess we'll jump in and we'll go with our most valuable monkey. And you know what? I'm going to start this time. I don't know if I've taken the lead on most valuable monkey in a long time. So I am going to say my most valuable monkey this episode is Mike, mainly because I really like the interaction he has with the crazy veterinarian, and I also just like his interaction with the farmer when they first go to him and propose working for him for a week to pay off that $100. Melanie, who's your pick?
I'm going to go with Davey. The gymnastics at the beginning, the bareback horse riding, and that cheeky grin he gives everybody when he first brings the horse into the house. Davey's my choice.
All right. And Jeff?
I, too, am going to go with Davey.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to go with Davey for similar reasons to Melanie, but I'm also going to have to throw in the fact that he won the horse race and essentially saved the day.
All right. Very, very cool. And don't forget that you can vote for your most valuable monkey over on the Zilch page, probably in the episode post or in a dedicated post that Melanie sometimes throws together. So either way, make sure you stop over to the Facebook group. And in addition to voting for your most valuable monkey, there are a lot of other reasons to stop at that page. It really is a great page where we all get together and we're able to sort of continue the discussions even off air. So a lot of fun there. Melanie, Jeff, this was another really fun recording. I always have a great time sitting down and watching the monkeys with you.
Won't you boys feel free to visit us?
Sure, maybe we can even help with the chores.
Oh, no. Just a visit will be fine.
And Jeff, I'm glad you soldiered through. Feel better.
Thank you.
And Melanie, we'll talk to you next time.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for tuning in to tonight's Monkeys Color Cast. I'm your announcer, Ghosty Timmers. Now, back to the show.
Hi, Zilch fans. This is Melanie Mitchell. Be sure to check out my book, Monkey Magic, a book about a TV show about a band. It's a lighthearted review and companion for the TV show that made the 60s fun. The paperback is available online from Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and the ebook can be bought anywhere that fine ebooks are sold. Check out the Monkey Magic Facebook page. Follow me on Tumblr at bluemoonalto.tumblr.com. and listen for my contributions here on Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
That was another fantastic Monkeys Color Cast commentary. It was a very good one. Thank you, Melanie, for all the work that you and Jeff and Craig do. And we have some really good news in the world of Zilch. We would like to congratulate Jeff Hewlett on getting engaged this last week. So that's great. Woo-hoo! So congratulations, Jeff and Meg. Congratulations on getting engaged, guys. We wish you all the happiness in the world. We love you, and we're glad that you are part of Zilch.
You'll soon be one of us.
Married.
Welcome to the club.
Yep. Is there anything else you guys would like to talk about?
You know, I really enjoyed listening to the Boss Radio episode, and something occurred to me when I was listening to it for maybe the third or fourth time. When you did that countdown of the top 10 songs of 1966, mm-hmm. The top song was The Ballad of the Green Berets. And I realized that that song and Last Train to Clarksville are essentially the same story.
Mm, you're right.
Yeah. They're both telling the story of a soldier who's about to ship off. One of them's probably a draftee coming out of basic training versus an elite soldier who's coming out of a top-notch school. But nonetheless, they're both communicating to the woman they love that they very well might not be coming back.
Mm. Yeah. That's a really good insight, something I hadn't really thought about. It's one of these days we ought to do a session on kind of like just the culture and the actual historical events that were going on between 66 and 68 and sort of compare that to what the guys were doing in their careers kind of at the same times.
And I also wonder how many people really clued into the Vietnam part of Clarksville.
I never did.
Never did I till Mickey started explaining it. I went, oh, okay.
I remember my uncle and my aunt talking about when they were teenagers and I was a wee one running around. To me, it was just a great song. I remember my uncle picked up on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have a smart uncle.
Well, when you think about it, he was of the age that they our family was worried that he was going to get called up.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in the context of the TV show, it's interesting, or maybe not, but I'll explore it anyway, that in our fictional world, these four 20-something young men had not a care in the world about what the draft board was doing.
Mm-hmm.
It never came up.
Well, they just wouldn't allow it.
The way it presented it, too, you know, the video shows them like a 1910 melodrama with, you know, tying Peter to the tracks. I mean, they didn't even blink that it was about Vietnam.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I argue that they couldn't.
That's true.
Yeah, they had to play it under the radar, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, even the Beatles were kind of told for a few years what they could and couldn't talk about by their management and their record companies, and then at some point, all bets were off. But when you think about, like, where they talk about the domino effect in the one episode, Melanie, you know which one I'm speaking about, right?
Yeah. There are actually three separate, that I can think of, sideways references to the Vietnam War slipped into the series. There's that one, the domino game in uh-huh. Monkey Mother. In Alias Mickey Dolenz, there's a peace protester who's being handcuffed to a chair in the police station. And then, of course, in Monkeys Watch Their Feet, Pat Paulson makes a really pointed joke about the Vietnam War.
Uh-huh.
Which I'm not going to quote here because I don't have it in front of me.
Right, and then we've got the movie Head. Yeah. With the war chant and the boys at war and the football player and all that.
Which was filmed roughly around the same time as the Tet Offensive.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
You know what would be fun, too, is if we had the discussion of what's the most political Monkees record.
Ooh, that's a good idea for a future episode.
The obvious choice is Mommy and Daddy, especially if you go back to the lyrics from the unreleased version that came out a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. We hope that you had a good time monkeying around with us. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Melanie, and Jeff and Craig as well. Jeff, we want to thank you for joining us today at Zilch headquarters. And as you know, it looks just like the Monkees' apartment, so it's a pretty cool recreation.
Money is the root of all evil.
Absolutely, and there's the Mr. Uh-huh. Schneider doll.
Is that an 8-inch Schneider doll or a 12-inch Schneider doll?
Now this time you went there! All right, folks. Hope to see you on the next episode of Zilch. Are you ready to sing us out, guys?
You got it.
Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet.
Hey, hey, I'm a monkey.
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit monkeys audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the monkeys or any of their members, past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burke. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.
Anyway.
This is your intrepid Zilch reporter, Fred Velez, speaking with the actor who played the psychiatrist in the Monkey's Paw episode. The day after Easter. So tell me, Doctor, when you got your Easter basket, was there anything unusual in it that you noticed?
You're such a silly. It is obviously a bunny and a chicken. Yeah.
Were there any jelly beans in the basket, Doctor?
It is obviously a bunny and a chicken.
What about chocolate Easter eggs? Were there chocolate Easter eggs, Doctor?
It is a bunny and a chicken!
Well, Doctor, you don't have to get excited. You don't get hostile about it.
Don't you give me that hostile stuff. I hate you. It's a bunny and a chicken.
I'm sorry.
Okay, that's like a bunch of girls.
The bunny and chicken.
A bunch of flowers.
The bunny and chicken.
A tomato ketchup stain.
The bunny and chicken.
A bunch of birds dancing.
The bunny and chicken.
Doctor, I was just asking what was inside your Easter basket.
It is a bunny and a chicken.
Well, this was your intrepid reporter, Fred Velez, for Zilch. Signing off. Sorry, Doctor.
It's obviously a bunny and a chicken.
Oh, thank you.
So, Jeff, now I ask you, how does this compare to real radio?
In doing research for the Dolan's joint, I can't say that damn thing. As a matter of fact, Bobby Hart said, you know, we might have sold more records if you could have pronounced that album title.
He may be on to something there.
And I said DJ BH doesn't quite have the same ring as CSNY.
Yeah, exactly. Running water, and running water's turned off. Fist bump. All right. Okay. I'm doing editing later.
I'm so excited.
Could you give me one more?
I'm so excited.
That last one, I just wanted to see how many times I could get you to do it. But you can smack me later.
You got a different take on it?
No.
I'm so excited.
Okay. Now, I mean, how many people have an Alan Thicke impersonation? Think about it. Anyhow.
And you haven't become wealthy yet.
No, I haven't. All right, silence. I must have silence. Anyway, clear the room. Oh, okay. You know you're a Monkees fan when you have a hard time spelling the actual word because you want to put the two E's in it.
When I try to type in the actual word on my iPhone, autocorrect always recommends two E's.
Absolutely.
I have trained it.
Do I have to do this all over again? No, we're just messing around now.